This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 37. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What's going on this week, Mike?
So I'm just reviewing some of the comments that you had sent to me based on the sales site that I put up for Audit Shark. So just kind of going through that and giving some thought to things that I need to change. And, there were some things that I haven't finished going through what you sent over, but there's some things that I know that I've got to change. Like there's images that I have to add. You know, you'd made some comments about the logo, and I know that that's got to change a little bit. He does look a little devious. But then there's the buy now price, the buy now page that I've got to kind of replace with a pricing page and a few other things. But it's coming along pretty well so far, and the code is definitely moving in the right direction.
Good, good. Well, nothing really new for me.
So why don't we get started on today's podcast topic? I believe we have 33 iPhone and iPad apps that we use, correct?
That's right. To give the listeners an idea, Mike and I had a list of about, what do we have, maybe a dozen? And you're like, that's perfect. And then as we were chatting, I'm like, oh, let me add a few. And I added like 20. You're like, come on, man, there's too many. So we are going to zip through these because we normally have 30 to 35 minute shows. Let's get rolling.
Okay. So for the first, we've split these up into a bunch of different categories. The first category is productivity. You want to start with that?
Yeah. So one of the first apps I downloaded is the Google app. I'm sure everyone has this, but this thing, I use this 5 times a day at least. The voice search is crazy.
I'll be honest, I've never even heard of it.
What?
I'm serious, I've never heard of it.
No. Yes,
for
you have.
The iPhone?
Yes.
Really?
Are you
maybe I installed it and I just
I thought you were kidding me. No.
No, I think I installed it and just ignored it. I was like, "Oh, this is dumb."
So, it's crazy. So there's a couple things. One is it has voice search. So you hit the little microphone and then you just speak something and it works really well. And I use that particular feature of it a few times a week. Typically when we're at, like when we're talking with people, we'll like have people over for drinks and they'll be like, what year was Home Alone released? And we'll get into this big discussion about it, which I know that's how exciting my dinner parties are. But this exact question came up.
Sign me up.
And I was like, oh, I think it's 1990. And I jumped on, you know, Home Alone, IMDb, and it pops up. But anyways, that's one of the crazy things. And the other one is you can use pictures to search the web. So it's Google Goggles. And there's just a little photo button there. And you just take a picture of anything. Like you take a picture of the Eiffel Tower. You can take a picture of a book cover. And it like searches the web for it and tries to match it and say like, that's the Eiffel Tower. And give you the page, you know, relevant stuff for it. It's crazy. So that's just the search. You can also just do manual search, you know. And then there's the apps, which are basically just hyperlinks. But I go there to open my Google Reader and to open my a few other things like Google Earth. You can open from there. So, yeah, it's pretty powerful. It's just search.
That's crazy. I don't remember ever stumbling across this.
So do you just, when you want to do a Google search, do you just open Safari and go to google.com and search?
Yeah.
Okay. So this just saves you a couple steps. I mean, that's all it is, right? You could do this through the other stuff. Although Google...
If I'm in my car or something like that, it'd be a lot more useful. But...
Yeah, it is. You still have to look down at the screen, though, is the problem. Well, cool.
Interesting.
So that's number one.
So the second one is online banking apps. And if you look at any of the different banks, most of them have their own banking application that they can use. But you can use these generally to check into your bank account, look at your balances, maybe make some payments, things like that. I know Bank of America has one. Can you think of any others that have them?
Yeah, I think Chase, Wells Fargo. I mean, all the major banks have them. And even some smaller banks. I searched for bank one time and there were these like local banks, like statewide banks that had them. So a lot of them have them. And I probably use mine once a week for checking balances or transferring funds or doing small things like that. So I've, as lame as it sounds, I remember originally thinking, oh, I'll never use that. But I actually do. I use it pretty regularly.
I downloaded one a while back for Bank of America and I stopped using it. I mean, it didn't give me anything extra that I didn't already have. And I was a little bit concerned about, you know, what happens if I lose my phone and somebody's able to get in there. And I'm sure that they have to log in and everything. But then I read something, I think it was on Wired or, you know, some news site someplace where it said that basically most of the banking applications suffered from a pretty severe security vulnerability because they were transmitting some information that was unencrypted that really should have been. So I decided to just stop using them after that.
Oh, nice. I didn't hear about that one. Yeah, they definitely have to log in, but it's a good point, right? I mean, there is a little bit more, certainly going to be more vulnerability on such a mobile device like an iPhone. All right. App number three is the MailChimp app. And I have to admit, I've only used this a few times, and I typically use it when I'm trying to monitor how many people have signed up for a list, when I'm doing kind of a launch where I'm sending people to a form and I'm out and about, and it's purely like a check-in thing. I haven't sent emails through it. I don't even know if you can, but it is, I mean, as you know, MailChimp is just a really well-done app, and the iPhone app leaves nothing to be desired. I mean, it really is a nice, well-written and easy-to-use app.
So the next one we have is Dropbox. And I've talked about Dropbox a few different times in the past. You know, I use it on my iPad, my iPhone, on my laptop, and on my desktop. And it basically allows me to keep all of my files in sync no matter what application I'm using them from. I can usually open up the files that I need. And because everything goes out to their servers, you can also, if you're at a machine that does not have Dropbox on it and you're not logged into it, you could go to their website and you can download the files that you want to work with through Dropbox. It works really well. It integrates with a lot of different other applications. So for example, there's another application we'll talk about later on called QuickOffice that allows you to open up files from Dropbox on your iPad or your iPhone. And there are several others that have that Dropbox integration as well.
Love Dropbox. I use it all the time, especially now that I have the iPad and the iPhone and the computer. Yeah, it's just the easiest way to move things around. But the whole free plan, but I think they give you way too much space. I would totally pay for this app, but I'm at like 50 megs of usage, and I think it's free up to 2 gigs. Like, I don't know if I'll ever pay for it.
Well, I understand what you're saying. If you're only using it for documents, yes. But I put things, I mean, and I know there's other people who do it as well, but they put like MP3s and stuff out there. And like, that's actually how I started transferring the files that we record this podcast on and send into our virtual assistant. I just put them in the Dropbox folder and they just show up.
I don't do that with any media. Like with MP3s, I just put them up to my web server and let her download them. So I could totally see someone using 2 gigs worth, but just the way I use it, I don't, and I almost wish I would have no problem paying them, but I feel like they could have a lot more users if they lowered that limit.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, they're smart guys. They certainly...
I'm sure they're making money from it.
I'm sure they're doing fine. Yep. Hey, one other thing I wanted to mention about that MailChimp app that I forgot is if you run that on an iPad, you can actually flip the iPad into keyboard mode and put it at the end of like a display table, and you can just put a sign-up form for your mailing list right there. And I saw some people do this at 59 Days of Code, this event that I judged for last year. And so basically you'd come up and they'd say, want to join my mailing list? And right there's an iPad and you just type your email in and bam, it puts you on their MailChimp list.
That's cool.
Yeah. So that was the one other benefit I wanted to mention. App number five is the GoDaddy app. And yes, I've actually registered domain names on the go. I registered one at a friend's house last week. She was mentioning something and I popped it open and registered the domain. So you can also do some minor management, domain management through it, but mostly it's for checking availability and registering stuff. So not something everyone needs, but I happen to, you know, buy a lot of domains. So it actually is worthwhile for me.
Very cool. So the sixth one on our productivity list and the last one for this particular section is To-Do for iPad, and it's from appigo.com. It's appigo.com. And this is more or less your standard to-do list management software. They do have integration with a web-based version, which I don't actually use that, but I have installed it on my iPad, and I basically just use it as my list of things to do on different projects. It allows you to categorize things, allows you to put due dates on things, prioritize them, add notes, tag them. There's a lot of different things that you can do with it. It's fairly inexpensive. I think it's like $4 or $5. It's a great app. Like I said, I use it constantly. I pretty much use it probably every day. So it's definitely well worth it if it's something that you're going to spend the time to actually use. I use it more for short-term stuff. I don't really put giant projects in there, although it does have the capabilities to do that. But because it prioritizes things in terms of, you know, when you put due dates on them, if you run up past this point where you've got all these different things up front because you've just haven't finished them in time, you get a lot of things that are, you know, front loaded onto your list, and you don't necessarily see the things that have a specific due date on them.
Our second category is communications, and we have four apps in this category. The first is Skype. Of course, I've used this quite a bit. In fact, at my house, my service, my AT&T service, is so bad that I log onto my wireless network through my iPhone and I use Skype to do my outgoing calls. It is so much more reliable. Now, the insanity of that is ridiculous, right? I have a phone and I'm now using Skype to do it and actually paying, what, 2 cents a minute to call out. But if I want a good phone call, you know, that's how I do it. And it works pretty well. Actually, you and I recorded a podcast episode, what, 26.5 or whatever, at Business of Software. I was on my Skype client on my iPhone. So that's been really cool.
Yeah.
And the other communication app that I use quite a bit is, it's called FTP On The Go, and it allows you to FTP stuff to and from a server. And I've found it to be super valuable, specifically on my iPad, because I've tried to use my iPad as a netbook replacement, and it allows me to fix things. You can actually log onto a server and edit, you know, it has a little text editor built in, so it's not something you want to write a lot of code, but if you really need to fix something that's crashed or make a small mod to something, it allows you to edit PHP files and, you know, any text file on a server. And FTP On The Go has Dropbox integration. So you can grab a file from Dropbox and upload it to the server, which is pretty cool, or vice versa.
Back to Skype just for a second. I've actually made calls through Wi-Fi earlier this year when I spent a couple of weeks in Germany. I made some Skype calls back to the U.S. and through my iPad, and it worked great. It was dirt cheap as well. That was the best part because, you know, obviously calling from Germany through a cell phone or even a landline is going to cost you an arm and a leg from a hotel room. It was amazing how well it worked and the quality of it. But the next couple of applications, SSH Terminal, very similar to FTP, except it's, you know, gives you SSH capabilities instead of FTP capabilities. And obviously, using SSH, if you have a Linux server, you can get into your server, you can just hop right into VI and edit whatever files you want, and then, you know, save them, pop right back out. And the last one in the communications category is RDP, which is basically a remote desktop application. If you were to go to the command line on your Windows box and type mstsc.exe, it'll pop open a remote desktop and you can get into, you know, any Windows machines that are on your network, or, you know, even out in the cloud if you have something that's co-located out there and you have RDP enabled. It's really interesting that you can do this from a Mac. And I saw a while back when I bought a MacBook that there was a tool released from Microsoft that allowed you to RDP from a MacBook into a Windows box. And there's a lot of different tools that are out there now, both on the iPhone and the iPad, that allow you to use the RDP protocol to get into your Windows machines. But it can be very useful, especially on the iPad, because you've got this 1024 by 768 screen that, you know, gives you a good view of what that desktop really looks like. On the iPhone, it's a little cramped. You have to scroll around a lot. It's kind of a pain in the neck, but it works really well on the iPad.
I'm going to have to check that out. I've heard of it, but I haven't used it. That's a good tool. Our next category is utilities, and the first one is called WordLens. And I have to admit, this one had a big buzz last week, or maybe it was a couple weeks ago. And basically, you can just view text through your iPhone camera, and in real time, as you're looking at it, it translates it into another language. And I've only used the demo, and all the demo does is it actually reverses the full word. It'll just reverse it in English. But if you pay for it, then you can do the translation. And they show you like doing street signs and other things. It's insane. I thought it was a hoax when I saw the video of it. But it's crazy. It works. And I don't even know what it costs. But I could see using it totally going when I'm going overseas to read street signs. I couldn't imagine reading a whole document with it. It's just kind of shaky. You know, you're holding your camera and trying to look at things. And it's hard with small text. But a small group of text, I could see it working well with. And then Instapaper, I bet a lot of people out there use this. Instapaper is basically a system where if you have something, you stumble upon a web page and you have this bookmarklet in your browser and you can click the read later icon. And all it does is it grabs the whole page, grabs the text from it, and it stores it on the cloud for you. So later, if I'm on my iPhone or my iPad, I can go to the Instapaper app and it just has all those bookmarks, but it's not just bookmarks. I don't even have to be online. Like once it downloads them, it actually downloads the kind of the raw HTML. And so I can just read it there. And as long as there's no outgoing links that I want to follow, I can just read articles offline. So it's pretty cool. And you can also install that on your iPhone and iPad so that you're adding bookmarks from there. But it's just kind of an aggregator of all the things that, you know, that you want to read later. The next one is called Atomic Light, and it's just an alternative browser to Safari. And I was using it because there was a web page that was crashing Safari. And Atomic Light has tabbed browsing, so it's really good for the iPad, not so much for the iPhone. It's just an alternative, and it's actually, you know, pretty solid browser with a lot more features than Safari. And then the last one in utilities is Analytics HD. And this app is $7 or $8, so it's fairly expensive compared to other iPhone apps. But it allows you to view Google Analytics data on your iPad. And I view Google Analytics data a lot, at least once a day. And obviously without Flash, you can't use Google Analytics, can't use the interface. So that's what this does. It just uses the API, pulls it down, and puts it into a different interface.
So the next category is applications for getting content on the go. And the first one we have is Kindle. And Kindle is offered on a number of different platforms. It's on Windows, Mac. You can get the application on your iPad or your iPhone. And then I believe they also have them for BlackBerry as well, don't they?
They have it for Android. I'm not sure if they have it on BlackBerry.
Yeah, right. I think it's Android, not BlackBerry. And then obviously there's the Kindle itself, that if you have a Kindle, you obviously have access to all of your Kindle content. But it's really nice to be able to buy your books or, you know, your magazine subscriptions or what have you, and get them directly in the Kindle, because you can get all of those and they get updated and sent to you pretty much immediately. I remember the last time I bought a book, it was on my iPad in not more than 10 or 15 seconds. I mean, it was pretty amazing. But being able to carry around, you know, a bunch of different technical books, being able to access those from pretty much anywhere is really pretty convenient.
Yeah, I agree. I can't go back now. I just have to buy everything electronically. I haven't bought a paper book in, 5 months, 4 months since I bought my iPad. And I've actually started selling some of my older books and replacing them. I really enjoy the form factor. I like that you can reverse the text, so it can be white text on a black background, black text on a white background. You can make it bigger, smaller. I mean, there's just, since I'm not reading stuff with a lot of diagrams, because I think that could kind of be a pain, I love having my whole library on my iPad through this Kindle app. Highly recommended. If you're not using it, you really need to think about it. The other two things I experimented with, I downloaded iBooks, which is Apple's store, and the Nook app. And I toyed with them a little bit, and they seem to have similar selections. Prices are a little higher. I mean, I'm sure it's case by case, but from what I see, Kindle is the leader, as you would expect, right? They came out first, and it's Amazon, so they just have the book advantage. One other thing that's cool is I started buying kids' books through the app, and on the iPad, they look great. And so my son now, when we read books at night, he's like, read books on the iPad, you know, and so he gets to pick from a few of the books that we have on there. I think it's the future, man, as these things get cheaper.
I've actually seen books that are sold outside of Kindle that are their own application. So, for example, my kids love Toy Story, and there are a couple of Toy Story books that you can get, which if you play them on the iPad, basically they read the story to the person, and as the text is being read to you, it gets highlighted. So it actually helps them read as well.
Yeah, that's nice.
My kids love it. They always want to hear the Buzz Lightyear story, which is funny.
Yeah, no, that's cool. So the next app in the content on the go category is the Entrepreneur Magazine app. And I don't read a lot of magazines anymore, but I wanted to bring this one up because I'm wondering if magazines are going to go this route where they have an app and you get the magazine each month, or if it's going to go the Kindle subscription route. Because I actually you can't get the Entrepreneur Magazine on the Kindle app, but you do get it for free. I mean, you basically download the Entrepreneur Magazine app and then you get the issues for free. You don't even pay for them. It's kind of cool. I mean, the Entrepreneur Magazine subscription is only 10 bucks a year anyways, but I would totally pay 10 bucks a year for all of my magazines. I read Time, and I would pay the subscription fee I pay now just to get them on my iPad and not have to deal with the paper, which I recycle anyways, you know, within a week of getting it. And I like to read them on airplanes, and I hate lugging 4 or 5 magazines. So if magazines go this route, I would pay the same amount that I pay now, or even a little more, frankly, to get them in electronic format. So I wanted to bring up Entrepreneur because it's the one of all of those that has an iPad app that, you know, actually allows you to get new issues. Time, you have to buy them one off $5 a piece. Whereas for a year subscription, I pay, you know, $1 a piece or something. So
Do they still have the advertisements and stuff in it?
They do. It's the full magazine, the Entrepreneur magazine. Yeah, it's the whole magazine in a nice format. And I don't need, you know, I've heard people complain about when magazines are just kind of transitioning from basically putting print on the iPad, you know, where it's just, you just flip the page like it's a print mag. People complain and say, oh, there should be more interactivity, blah, blah, blah. To me, it's a great 1.0. It's a great version 1.0 for this stuff. The color's nice. It's just a rich user experience. And I don't need some fancy stuff yet. I'd prefer that they get it on quickly and get it on now. And then if they need multimedia later, then do it. But I'd rather have it. I mean, there's so many magazines that are not on the iPad that either don't have the iPad app or that you know, you can't get it on the Kindle app. And I'm just wondering, like, what are you doing? This is where everything's going. You know, I just don't see paper magazines having a future.
Yeah, I wonder about the future of magazines myself. My wife was an associate art director at a national magazine, and I don't know how they're doing now because she left there, you know, probably 3 years ago. But magazines are having a tough time. So it's interesting to see that the way things are going with them, and I wonder how the magazines she used to work for, how they're doing these days and if they're going to be able to continue. The next application is Evernote. And if you haven't used Evernote before, you should definitely give it a try. Evernote allows you to take notes for different things on your iPad. And there's also an Evernote application that you can put on your desktop. And that's really nice because it synchronizes between them automatically. So changes that you put into your iPad will then be reflected onto your desktop once your iPad goes online. So if you're on a bus or a subway or something like that, and you're taking notes and jotting down ideas and stuff, those things will automatically go over to your desktop whenever you get there. I'm told that there's also a lot of additional functionality within Evernote. So for example, you can email it photos and tag different things, and it will help you keep all those different things organized. You can email it web pages, and you know, it will allow you to organize and tag all that content and make it easily searchable for you. But I've never really gotten into most of that stuff. Most of what I use it for is for taking notes on my iPad and then just syncing them back to my desktop.
The next app we have for content on the go is actually two different applications. And one is called GoodReader, and it's a really solid PDF reader. And it also integrates with Dropbox. So that's how I read PDFs on the iPad. I drop them into Dropbox, and then you just click a link and it opens in GoodReader. And it's got all kinds of nice features and stuff. It is a couple bucks. I think it's $2 or $3. But I've enjoyed that.
Totally worth it. Yeah, I totally use it all the time. And there's certain PDFs that I have to refer to, which are, you know, upwards of 1,000 pages long because they're product documentation PDFs. And GoodReader handles them, you know, without sweating at all. I mean, it's amazing how quick you can go from one end of a PDF to the next. I mean, it seems to me in many cases like it's faster and better than Adobe PDF Reader.
Yeah, I haven't even downloaded Adobe PDF Reader, which is funny. All I've used is in Dropbox, there's a built-in PDF reader, and it doesn't hold a candle to GoodReader. I mean, to pay $3, you make that up the first time you save 5 minutes. You know what I'm saying? It's ridiculous. So yeah, I highly recommend it. The other one that I use is called QuickReader, and that's actually from Patrick Thompson, who is a Micropreneur Academy member, and he has several iPhone apps out there. QuickReader is cool. The real core advantage of QuickReader is that it helps you improve your reading speed. So you can set, you know, you want to read at 160 words per minute and set some other variables, and it will like scan through it and actually go through a book and highlight the words, and it trains your eyes essentially to just read faster. And there are a bunch of built-in books, a bunch of public domain stuff, like whatever you can think of, Sherlock Holmes and Frankenstein and Dracula and all that. And then there's a bunch of other books that you can add into it. So definitely recommend it. Again, it's like a dollar or two, but I've used it, and it just trains your eyes and your mind to process the information quicker. And it's totally cool. Totally works on the iPhone. I haven't even tried it on the iPad, but it works well on the iPhone when you're sitting on the subway or just sitting there waiting for something, just to spend a few minutes to you know, zip through a book.
The next one in the content to go category is an application called QuickOffice. And if you go take a look at QuickOffice, you're going to find that it's probably one of the more expensive applications. It's about $12. It is well worth the $12 because you can use it to open and edit Word documents, Excel documents, and they recently added the ability to create PowerPoint documents all on your iPad or your iPhone. And it's amazing how it works. And it actually even supports things like password protected documents. So I use it sometimes for password protecting certain Excel files if I want to keep a small subset of my passwords on there that I can access from anywhere. And I can't say enough good things about it. I mean, it doesn't support, obviously, the full feature set of what Microsoft Office does, but it's enough that you could certainly get by just using that. And I own both that and the Pages application from Apple, and QuickOffice is by far much better than what I found Pages was capable of.
I'm looking at the screenshots of QuickOffice because I haven't used it, and it's insane. The PowerPoint editor is crazy. This is really impressive what you can do on an iPad. All right, our next category is finance, and there's two apps in the finance category, except one of them is a duplicate. It looks like I had online banking in two places. Oops.
Oops. So,
the title of the show may soon be 32 iPhone apps. The one finance app that I've used quite a bit is the PayPal app. And again, it's a limited functionality, but it allows you to check balances, send money. I think you might be able to withdraw money, but there's a few things you can do, and I've done them several times on the go. So it's not something that I use on a regular basis, but it is nice. It's a lot faster than using the PayPal website. That's the real advantage of it.
So the next category is the entertainment category. So the first application in this category is for using Twitter. And personally, I use TweetDeck. There are a lot of different Twitter applications that you can use, and it's more or less a matter of preferences. Rob, I think you said that you use the actual officially sanctioned Twitter application, correct?
That's right.
Yeah. So, you know, what I found was I actually downloaded a bunch of different ones before I decided to just go with TweetDeck, and that's what I decided on. But if you have a Twitter account, definitely check into some of the different Twitter options that are available to you through the different applications. Most of them aren't going to cost you very much. You know, a lot of them are actually free and or have light versions. So you can at least check out the light version before you decide you're going to sink a couple of dollars into the full-blown version for whichever one it is that you decide that you like.
Is TweetDeck free?
I don't remember. I've had it for so long, I just don't remember.
Yeah, I think it might be. It's free on the PC. So yeah, I would TweetDeck solid, and the Twitter built client is solid. I know both of those. The next app is the Facebook app, and obviously this is pure entertainment. But it
really
it looks,
you don't use that for work?
Yeah, I know. Well, that remember it was funny. I was going to put these in the productivity category, and Mike's like, no. He's like, these are not productive. And I was like, yeah, you're right. Like, I don't even know what I was thinking. I don't have much to say about the Facebook app. It works. It allows you to update, upload photos. What I like is on my iPhone, I can take a video. We were at the snow last week, and I took just a 10-second video. And then you just click the Facebook app. You can upload it, make a comment, bam, it's there. I mean, that's cool that I don't have to go home and put it on my computer and upload it and all that.
My one gripe about the Facebook app, though, actually, I guess I have two. One is they don't have an iPad native version. And the second is that chat does not work.
They do have an iPad native version. I think it just came out. Yep, I was just looking today for this show, and it's called FacePad, iPad. So I haven't even installed it. I don't know. It says release date was December 29th. I don't know if that was the first release or what, but if it's called FacePad, then I wonder if it's released by Facebook or if it's a third-party developer.
Yeah, I found there was a Netflix application a while back called PhoneFlix.
Yeah, that's actually on our list.
Actually, yeah. Well, why don't we just talk about them now? PhoneFlix and Netflix. PhoneFlix was actually made by somebody other than Netflix.
Yep.
And Netflix, I guess, forced them to change the name. And when I realized that it was not actually Netflix, I basically stopped using it.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, because see, I've used it to manage my queue for months since I got my iPhone, which is what, 18 months ago. So, because Netflix didn't have an app until very recently. I don't even know if you can manage your queue through the Netflix app. Can you? Can you add and remove stuff?
I don't recall. I mean, I use it to just, I don't think so.
I use it just to stream. Yep. And whereas I use PhoneFlix to do all my queue management, which again, it's one of those things where you're like, how often are you going to do that? But I when I'm talking with people and they're like, you got to see this movie, that's what I do. I get out my iPhone and I punch it in right there because otherwise I'm not going to remember it.
Yeah, I don't recall. I remember looking at it a while ago, and I looked at PhoneFlix, and I was like, I don't think this is actually released by Netflix.
No, it's definitely not. Nope, it's not.
Okay. I don't know why. That bugged me.
Yeah. No, I can, because it had FLIX at the end, and you thought it was developed by them, and that's,
oh yeah,
that makes you feel a little like they're pulling one over on you or something.
Not really so much that, because who knows what they're doing under the covers with that information. I mean, I guess what's the worst they can do is they can sign me up for some new service that Netflix has. I mean,
yeah,
deal, but it bugged me a little bit. I mean, my, you know, I've got a background in security, so it's just like, I don't know.
Sure. But I mean, so most of the apps though, like the Twitter app that you're using is TweetDeck, right? So they could tweet on your behalf.
I mean, but I think that they have to use the API. Well, I guess you're right.
Same thing with the FTP on the Go app that I buy, the SSH terminal, the RDP, like all those are not developed by any particular person. So anyways, I'm not saying right or wrong. I use NetPhoneFlix. I certainly can't vouch for the security of it, but no one has added items to my queue yet. So, and just to confirm, I did look at the Netflix app, and really all the Netflix app is a frame around their website. So you can just search and add stuff if you want. But as you said, all I've used it for is just to stream stuff instantly. And the cool part is you can stream it to your iPad or your iPhone. And whenever I'm on wireless now and I need some entertainment, I totally watch and stuff.
Right, right.
So cool. Our next app in the entertainment category is Pandora. If you haven't used Pandora, it is phenomenal. Basically, you enter either a band name or a song name. It has something in it called the Music Genome Project, where they categorized a bunch of music based on all these factors, and it really can predict and provide music that is very similar to that song or band you've entered. And people had tried to do this before, and no one had succeeded like Pandora. Like, Pandora actually works. And I actually pay $36 a year for the paid service because it doesn't have commercials. It allows you to listen to more music for a stretch and, you know, a couple other things. But the free version is perfectly adequate. And if you're into music and just having background music on, either while you're coding or maybe while you have folks over to have dinner and wine or something, you can just, you know, enter a nice smooth jazz or a, you know, acoustic guitar person, and it just picks a bunch of songs. It was also great around the holidays. We had a Christmas party, and I entered like a single instrumental Christmas song and hit play, and it just played for 5 hours straight instrumental Christmas music. And it was really cool. And I, of course, put my iPhone in my iPhone dock to listen to the music, but you could listen to it via headphones as well.
You didn't have the headphones on while your people were over?
Christmas music? Yeah, that would have been great, huh? But the cool thing is it works over 3G and wireless, so you could do it out and about as well.
Got it.
The next app, because Mike, I don't think you use this, is called Type and Talk, and this is purely kind of a gag app, but it's pretty cool. I'm actually going to whip it out. So rather than try to describe what Type and Talk does, I'm just going to play a little snippet.
Hello, Mike. I hope you finish Audit Shark in 8 to 10 weeks.
So if you could make that out, it was a computer voice saying, "Hello, Mike, I hope you finish Audit Shark in 8 to 10 weeks. I basically come up behind my wife and like have it say things to her while she's cooking dinner. And I don't know, it's just a crack up to hear it say stupid things.
There's another application called Talking Tom and one called T-Rex or something like that. It's basically, Talking Tom is this cat, and you can abuse the cat, which my kids like to do. Like, you can pull his tail and smack him in the head, but if you talk, he will repeat what you said back to him. And then there's the T-Rex does a similar thing, but, you know, if you grab his tail, he'll try to bite you and things like that.
That's nice.
So
good for kids.
Yep, good for kids.
All right, the last one in the entertainment category is the TED application. You've heard of the TED Talks, and it's just an interface to search and watch the TED videos and listen to the audio. So it's something that I found useful for when I'm sitting around waiting for things. Our next category is Screw the Retailer. Mike, you came up with that name. There's basically this app, it's called SnapTel. And I use this all the time at Barnes & Noble and Borders because I see a book I want. I don't want a physical book. I want the Kindle version. So I just, on my iPhone, I open SnapTel, take a picture of the cover, and it identifies the book. And I think it might use Amazon Mechanical Turk and actually send it out in real time to a person. And that's what I've heard. And that someone then identifies the book. And then it brings back and it's like, you click to view all the stores in the area that carry it and their pricing. Or click to go online, and you can just click, and it shows you it's on Amazon, you know, does a big comparison, and I typically go and add it to my Amazon wish list later, come back and, you know, buy it as a Kindle version. So it's pretty cool. It's just, it keeps you from having to type in the whole title and stuff while you're sitting there in the store.
So the last category we have is a personal applications category. And the first one, I found this really useful when I went to Disney World over Thanksgiving vacation, was an application called Walt Disney Wait Times. And essentially what it does is you tell it which of the Disney theme parks you're at, and it will show you a list of all the different rides and different things that they have going on there, and exactly what, or at least roughly what the wait time is for you to get onto that ride from any given point. And you can use that to kind of figure out where it is in the park that you want to go. So if you're on one side of the park and you see that nearby there's a ride that the wait time is only 20 minutes versus something else that's, you know, 90, you might go to the one that's 20 minutes instead of 90. And you can use it to help you decide where you're going to go. And their fast pass things are nice, but they don't tell you several hundred yards away exactly how long the wait is until you actually get over there. And it relies on user feedback, so it's nice to kind of contribute back to it and say, oh, okay, this is what the actual wait time is at a particular ride. And it seems to me like there's enough people using it that it seems fairly accurate. The next application is a program called Lose It. And what Lose It is it's essentially, I don't want to call it a weight loss product, but you can certainly use it for that. You can use it mainly to help keep track of the different things that you're eating and keep track of your calorie intake for the day. You can also use it to keep track of how much you've exercised, and that will tell you what your calorie intake is for the day and what your, you know, based on your weight loss goals, whether or not you're over your calorie intake for the week. It's very helpful if you're trying to actually keep track of that. What I did find was that if after using it for several weeks, if you stop using it, you tend to stop paying attention to what you're eating and how much you're exercising, and you'll kind of go off of whatever diet it is that you were trying to maintain.
And the last app on our list is called White Noise, and it's basically a white noise generator. And I've used this via headphones on an airplane. I've used it all the time when we travel. I turn it up and put it on the floor of our hotel room so that my child doesn't get woken up by the drunk guy next door, the person lighting firecrackers in the parking lot. I know it saved my kid from getting woken up from stuff. Well, I think that about wraps us up for today. I hope we've offered some good suggestions for your iPhone and iPad consumption, both for business and personal and entertainment use. And if you have any apps you'd like to suggest, feel free to send them to us via the info that Mike's going to give you now.
Or you can post them in the comments of this particular podcast. If you have a question or comment, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690, or you can email it in MP3 or text format to questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. If you enjoy this podcast, please consider writing a review in iTunes by searching for Startups. You can subscribe to this podcast in iTunes or via RSS at startupsfortherestofus.com. A full transcript of this podcast is available at our website, startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. We'll see you next time.